It's time for Twake This Week in Google. Stacey Higginbotham is here. Jeff has the week off. No politics, I'm sorry. Aaron Newcomb, the maker guy, is here also. We're going to talk about CES. There, Stacey found so many interesting, weird, cool, and useless gadgets at CES. We've got a long list. What's happening to Hangouts? Where is Google Voice going? And Waymo has made it Waymo less expensive to buy LiDAR. Yeah, that doesn't really work, does it? This Week in Google is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by Cachefly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 387, recorded Wednesday, January 11th, 2017. Mommy's Special Shawl. This Week in Google is brought to you by Curry, a real live robot with a great personality. Curry is available for pre-order now at heycurry.com. That's HEYKURI.com. And by LegalZoom. Take control of your family's future and get the legal help you need. Visit LegalZoom.com and enter Twig at checkout for special savings. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interests in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/twig. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we talk about the latest from the Googleverse. I have to give you a disclaimer every single week because I still get emails. You know, you spent the whole first segment of This Week in Google on Facebook. Yeah. It's not just Google, despite the name. It's the internet, what's going on in the world with Jeff Jarvis here. It's often about journalism because, hey, that's changing too. It's really this show, if anything, is about how the world is changing thanks to technology. Jeff is not here. He's traveling. So we've got Aaron Newcomb filling in. It's great to see you, Aaron.
Hey, good to see you, Leo.
Regular appearance on this network on Floss Weekly on the new screensavers all about Android. He's a maker, runs the Benicia Makerspace. Good yep. friend of the network. It's great to see you. I don't know. Have you met Stacey Higginbotham?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've been on before, I think, a couple of times maybe. Okay. Yeah.
Stacey's
here. I get excited when Aaron's on.
Yay! Stacey's here from the IoT Podcast, IoTPodcast.com, and Stacey on IoT. She's an IoT guru, a journalist going way back, and just back from CES. How was it?
It was awesome! And I'm going to apologize to everybody because I have a cold, so I might be less coherent than usual, but still excited.
Just as enthusiastic, I'm happy to see. A lot of people came back. We were just talking to Paul Theron on Windows Weekly, and he's so grumpy about CES, and everybody gets sick. You did. I noticed you have a cold.
So, okay, I don't get grumpy about a lot of things because I'm pretty darn cheerful. This was not a CES where you saw lots of new things. I didn't walk through going, holy cow, my world is rocked. This is amazing. But I did see a maturation in IoT. I saw a lot of really interesting hardware startups that are actually pulling together some really important pieces. And I also saw Qualcomm has this amazing glance technology that is doing computer vision, itty bitty on a chip, and it's sub two milliwatts of power.
Wow.
Which means you could have computer vision on a sensor.
Wow.
It's pretty game changing. It's not real yet though. That was kind of part of the CES vaporware, except Qualcomm usually does try to bring these things out. They're giving it to their partners to like experiment with it. And as a note for people who care about computer vision, this is only going to do limited models. So it's only going to be able to tell the difference between like a few things. So it's not like Facebook style. It will recognize your individual face, but it would recognize like people versus trees and dogs. So
the Qualcomm story is actually kind of interesting. They've gone through several cycles. In fact, they were a real hot stock for a while. Because they made what, the CDMA chips that all the phone companies were using, and then
Verizon
or one of the other, or Sprint. Yeah. But it seems as if you know, through acquisitions and through kind of a little bit of pivoting, they've now become like a chip maker to rival Intel.
So that's been going on. I think the as the mobile evolution revolution happened, people were like, oh, look, Qualcomm is the Intel of the mobile phone. And they were. And part of it was because they had their applications processors, the brains, melded to the radio. So it was cheaper. So you had this massive Qualcomm silicon package and you're like, yeah, yeah.
But they were originally a radio company. And then,
they
just adapted ARM architecture to make a multi-purpose chip, a system on a chip. And that's what really propelled them.
They saw that we were going to do, that we could shove more computing into a small phone. And they were like, hey, how can we do this with maximum efficiencies and lowest costs for smartphone people?
They also did a smart thing when it wasn't clear who was going to be the next generation. They chose LTE over WiMAX. And that turned out to be a very good choice. And they've become the LTE radio provider, right?
They actually bought a WiMAX company, Flareon, and they got the patents associated with WiMAX, but they were like, that's probably not going to be it. And then all in on LTE. So they actually did a little hedge.
What I didn't know is that they own Atheros, which is probably the number one Wi-Fi chip maker as well.
That 3 years ago. Mm. That was like an IoT buy. And then they also, so you see them, like I always follow Qualcomm because they usually, right before something gets super hot is when they make their investments.
Very
so they
smart.
Actually bought AMD's graphics division back in the day before everyone was like, hey, I want to watch videos on my phone. They did Atheros. They just did, what did they just do? They did some drone deals. And now they're going to be bought by NXP. No, they're buying NXP. Who's buying whom?
They own.
Maybe it's a merger.
It's a merger. Well,
Qualcomm NXP merger. Oh, that's interesting. They own Surf, which is the big GPS chip company. Mm-hmm. They really, if you look at what they own and their portfolio and what they're doing, and now with this 835 chip, which they also talked about at CES, which is not merely a server chip, but like a super chip, the first 10 nanometer FinFET technology. They're actually at the point where they're eclipsing Intel. No?
Okay, so there are more companies, because they've built everything on ARM architecture, which isn't a bad plan. There's
a lot of other ARM manufacturers, though.
Exactly. There's a whole other ecosystem at play here. So Intel was the only x86, so there was no competition.
But even Intel wants to make ARM now.
I know, they do. But like Cavium has a server chip for... server chip for servers.
Yeah.
An ARM-based server chip. Applied Micro has one.
So they're not the only player in the ARM space.
But they're definitely the largest and most credible. They have a deal in China to make servers.
And they're making, and again, they're making systems on a chip, which is a more, you know. So Apple makes ARM processors. They don't make them, but they create their own ARM-based processors for their iPhone and iPod. Samsung is a big ARM manufacturer. The Exynos chip is based on ARM. But ARM is hot. I mean, Microsoft announced Windows on ARM a couple of weeks ago.
That was big.
A lot of people in Apple land are convinced that Apple eventually will move off x86, the Intel architecture, and move everything to ARM. Of course, not just the iOS stuff, but the macOS stuff as well. Aaron, you must be following all this too, because as a maker, you're playing with chips all the time.
Right. And a lot of the boards that I use Allwinner. They're another player in the ARM space. And you can develop an ARM SoC, fairly easily. The standards are out there. And ARM is getting faster and faster all the time.
Yeah.
So, there's reports out about, all the new phones. It's like, wow, when is ARM going to, move past Intel in terms of performance?
It's not quite desktop class yet, right?
It's not desktop class, but there's a lot of processing power there, and there's things that you can do with it. And all of the libraries have been written, compiled on ARM now. So when you're using an ARM system, it feels just like you were using, any other system, a BSD or a Linux or, for that matter, a Windows. So, all of the ARM is huge in the maker community. because the systems don't need to be as big. They're smaller. They're for hobbyists. They're easier and cheaper to produce. For all of those reasons, ARM is just really becoming, and it's different, you know, it's different. It's a different sort of architecture. So it doesn't necessarily have to compete with Intel.
Right. Because, it's low power. You know, so yep. both in terms of power usage and in terms of abilities. But that's changing a little bit as it gets faster and faster and smarter and smarter. And ultimately, the IoT is driving us towards this distributed computing model where no one computer needs to be that fast, right?
Right. Well, I was going to say ARM doesn't think about, I mean, okay, they think about processing, but you see this even with Intel when they're talking about things, processing power is not the game it used to be.
Right.
Now you're looking at, you know, performance per watt. You're looking at, I mean, battery life if you're not talking about servers. So I think, again, now if you're actually like thinking about investment or like the future, an important thing to think about is a lot of ARM. One, ARM is licensing its technology, so it's not a one-to-one to Intel.
Yeah, ARM doesn't make chips. ARM is an architecture, not a manufacturer. They're a fabless.
They're fabulous.
Fabulous.
I'm sorry. But two, a lot of these embedded chips, they sell for like $5 or less.
Right.
And Intel chips are like, what, 130, 200? I mean, they come in an armored truck when
that's
you
the
see
point.
Them coming into a...
Intel comes from that mindset where you have one big thing, one big expensive computer. ARM comes from the idea of having lots of mini mites everywhere, right? So we used to go to CES every year. We'd always be in the South Hall by the Home Automation Alliance, the Zigbee, the Z-Wave, all of these people.
I visited those booths.
Remember the Zigbee Pavilion? And it was always, every year I'd go, and it was like the land that time forgot. There was just very little progress made over a period of 10, 15 years. Are we finally making that some headway here with home automation?
Things look cleaner and prettier. So there, I saw over a dozen companies with full-on smart home automation suites for sale. And they range from like service providers, like Deutsche Telekom has one. I can't think of it. It starts with a Q, Coivio. Anyway, Comcast actually was there for the first time showing off Xfinity Home. So this was their first booth. And then you had like a lot of very viable Chinese companies coming in, like Zimondo had a very pretty, well-designed products that I'm actually going to get copies of. I'm going to get versions of so I can review them because I was actually really impressed at what they were showing. And so that feels maybe not progressed, but it feels usable for normal people. It doesn't feel like, you know, a bunch of people and programmers and CEDIA guys hanging around those booths. It felt like real people could be there.
Where it always was hobbled was by the kind of Tower of Babel of all these different protocols, none of which talk to anything else. And then we went through the hub era, which was, smart.
We're still in the hub era.
We're still in the hub era where people like SmartThings and others would create a hub that spoke many languages. And the idea was, well, we can control it all. But it's always been too complicated for consumers, too kind of fragmented to invest. I mean, you would be very reluctant to invest heavily. I guess you had to. You know, if you went Crestron, well, you're all Crestron now. Or you go Zigbee, well, you're all Zigbee now. And that's so Apple came along with HomeKit. Google's got its HomePlay, although I don't know what to call it.
Those are all too early.
It's too early.
I talk to people 3 to 5 years till standards don't matter, till the protocol wars don't matter. And I was like, well, what do I do? Do I buy my light bulbs today?
They said that 3 to 5 years ago. They said that.
No one is. So what Zigbee got together with the Thread Group. These are two wireless protocols that run on 15.4, I think. The Zigbee radio, basically.
Yes.
Thread runs on that too. They created .dot. So now we've got to be thinking .dot is the application layer that goes over it and talks to things.
It's called .dot?
Yes. .dot. Just .dot. The goal is eventually that will
run.
Sounds
like a Dr. Doolittle kind of animal. I got a .dot here. It goes two ways at once.
So that's, and that'll compete with Intel's backing something called IoTivity.
And oh, God. It's, oh, God.
I know, they're awesome.
All the good names are taken.
They are.
IoTivity.
So last year, it was AllJoin and IoTivity. Okay. And IoTivity ate AllJoin. So now that's part of IoTivity. So now your two standards wars are going to be IoTivity, dot, dot, and I'm going to say Weave from Google.
Okay.
Yeah, hopefully.
Hopefully.
Why do you like Weave, Aaron? Why would you like Weave to be a player?
Mostly because I guess I trust Google to manage it. I don't think they have a huge stake in it. Their stake is different than everybody else's. Right. They're not necessarily trying to sell devices.
If anybody, if anybody were going to unite, it would be Google because they're not in the hardware business particularly. They're in the the communications business, I guess.
Right. Right. And yeah, intelligence business or data business.
Data business.
You know, and so. So for that reason, and also because, you know, in order to get these devices to work, you need code that is fast, is simple, and Google's really good at doing fast, simple code. I mean, that's their bread. They have to do that. That's how your searches on Google show up so quickly. And that's how you can ask Google Home to do something and it responds, you know, almost instantaneously.
It is kind of amazing. Yeah.
And so if anybody can make that happen, I think, you know, I'd like Google to, but you know, I wanted Google to win with things like Google Plus and, you know, things like, I mean, there's a whole string of things I've wanted Google to do.
Over.
all of those things, right?
I think that one's over. I hate to tell you, Aaron, bad news. Google
that's
Plus.
That's the downside, right? Is there's things like you can go back and there's a whole history of Google Buzz and all these things that were cool, but Google kind of fell down on it. And so I'm hoping they don't this time. But if it becomes a standard and other people start using it, then that's what happened with Android, right?
What does Google need to do to make a Thread and Weave succeed?
How big is Weave? That was one of I don't know how much memory you need to have like to run it because in IoT, you need something that runs on a super small footprint. Right. That's where IoTivity is weak right now. Google's Brillo is too big, but I don't know where Weave is. And
yeah,
I know.
Yeah, Brillo is Android Things now, right? Did that change that?
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yes.
Yeah. It's hard to keep up with. We talked about the only reason I know is because we talked about this on the new screensavers before the break.
Right.
So they just redid that. And in fact, you can download that and run it on a Raspberry Pi. But again, that's full stack Linux, right? Running on a Raspberry Pi. It's not microcontroller firmware like you would want to run in these devices.
You can see why this is, so annoying and complicated to consumers that they just throw up their hands and say, I'm not going to. This is why it hasn't caught on. And B, you could see why journalists are having a hard time covering it. It's, I mean, this is your beat, Stacey. You picked this. Are you nuts?
I love it. Okay, I used to cover semiconductor manufacturing.
Oh, okay.
So
this
you know,
is very similar.
I'm like, I used to write about low-k dialectics, you guys.
Oh, well, there you go. All right, so let's talk about actual things then.
Yeah, let's talk about fun devices.
That you saw. I mean, one of the things, from a distance, it was clear that Amazon Voice Services really was one of the big winners at CES. They were everywhere, weren't they? Dozens of devices.
Yes. She who shall not be named was everywhere. She was in these, even in Echo-like devices. So we saw Lenovo's prettier, better speaker.
It just looked like an Echo with nice fabric around it. Is it a better speaker?
Not? It is. It has better. So the big complaint against the Echo is it's kind of not enough bass. This has boom, boom.
And it's $20 less.
And it is $20 less.
But Amazon doesn't care because they make money. They're kind of an interesting Googly kind of position in all of this. They make money if you use it because most of the time people buy dollhouses. And it finances the whole...
Okay, can we just talk about that? Okay. Just for a brief two seconds.
Everybody knows this story by now. We've talked about it before, but a station in San Diego did a story about a six-year-old who inadvertently, or maybe even advertently, bought a dollhouse using her parents' Amazon Echo. And apparently, they listened back to the recordings because, as you know, Echo saves the recordings. And she just said, oh, let's play. And then apparently 4 pounds of sugar cookies in a dollhouse arrived 2 days later. So they did the story, and then the anchor said, gee, I wish I could say, Echo, buy me a dollhouse. And people, according to the news, all over San Diego, their Echoes suddenly ordered dollhouses. That's got to be apocryphal, right? Is that what you're about to say, Stacey?
Well, the first part, I can see how that happens, but you have to confirm a purchase. So
right.
I can see how a kid playing would be like, yeah, yeah, whatever, you know.
And you have to give it a pin.
Well, no, you don't. So when you set up your Echo, you are automatically opted into buying stuff, but you do have to confirm it. So that's step one to avoid
this.
But
the pin is not there by default.
Right. Two, you can set a passcode, and I highly recommend you guys do, even though it is the least secure thing to give of what, because she asks you, what's your passcode? And then you're like, it's, you know, 1234. And then your kid who's sitting right there now knows the passcode. So I'm kind of like, is this secure?
I suspect that's what happened. I have heard conflicting stories. I've asked my audience if the pin is on by default or not.
It is not.
Here's what my guess is. It was not earlier on.
Oh, it is now.
But I believe it is now. And I don't remember ever putting a pin on my stuff, but it does have a pin. So I think they changed at some point is what happened. But
okay,
I may be wrong.
Yeah, I was in that initial December, and once you buy one and set it up, you're stuck forever.
Yeah.
Not stuck forever. But.
Yeah. So I've seen actually online terms of service that say a pin is required. I'm not sure. So has anybody bought, here's the thing, I'll ask the chat room, has anybody bought and installed an Amazon Echo or a Dot in the last month, and does it have a pin or not?
These people are saying no. They're saying it's not changed. They just looked at the registration page. So
okay.
Somebody in your chat room is excited about RISC-V. I'm going to talk to them later. All right. Sorry.
You mean RISC, Reduced Instruction Set Computing?
Yes. It's an open source computing project.
And there's
reporting on it right now.
The fifth generation. All right.
No. Don't. Yeah. See.
So it is possible. It is possible that that people all over San Diego, the news anchor ordered a dollhouse.
It is possible, because if you don't have the pin and you could. But okay.
But it still says, are you sure you want to buy this? Or do you want to buy this?
Yes. Yeah. So that was my thing. I'm like, God, news, we're so credulous and stupid sometimes. Okay. Yeah.
But we've known this because our audience are early adopters. Many of them have Echoes, and we've had this problem for a year at least.
Yes.
That we can't say the A word.
Yeah.
So we've known about this for a while, but I think it's probably was an overblown story. No, nonetheless, everybody loves it. It's a cute story. So, all right, let's take a break. I want to talk about more hardware. We could talk about RISC-V if that's what floats your boat.
Nope.
We could anything you're in a mood to. This is our first chance to talk IoT at CES. You're the expert, Stacey. So, and
I'm going through my things.
It's nice that we have Aaron here because, of course, as a maker, he's deals with a lot with these chipsets and with its technologies all the time. So, and you've built quite a few IoT, handmade IoT devices, right, Aaron?
Yeah, from scratch. We showed those off on the new screensavers as well. I'm working right now, actually, on a simple relay. I call it a simple Internet of Things switch, which has a small microcontroller on it and a relay, and you can program it easily and stick it in your wall behind your thing, and you can program it yourself to do whatever you want to do. Now, of course, it's not going to be for an average Joe user, but at least it gives you an option to do something different or to conform to whatever API you want to conform to.
I feel like that even with all the progress we've made in the consumerification of IoT, really anybody who's trying to integrate all this, everybody's got one or two things, unintegrated, things. But the people who are integrating this stuff are more like Aaron, where they're, I've built a little device here that I've plugged in. I mean, it is not yet a consumer, easy-to-use technology, even with the hubs. I think we still have a way to go.
Yep.
Let's talk about robotics, because one of the things that was announced and shown for the very first time at CES was Curry. Did you get to see a little Curry, the real-life robot pal? Isn't it cute?
It's so cute. It's not coming out till like November.
I know. But I'm, you know, and we're trying to get him to bring one up here. This is our new sponsor. The story is interesting.
Sorry. I will come to the studio to play with Curry.
I know
again.
You will. And, you know, you should bring your daughter because it's exactly your daughter's size. The kids love Curry. Curry's just a couple of feet high. It's a he. I asked them. The company that makes it, Mayfield Robotics, has been doing this stealth for about 3 or 4 years now. They completely sneakily created this robot. But I found out that they're owned by Bosch, the big German industrial company. So there's some big bucks behind Curry. This is not, you know, somebody in their garage. And they've done something really interesting. In fact, this was a trend, I think, at CES, because they've made Curry, it's not humanoid. You wouldn't confuse it with a human, but it's appealing. It's cute. It's got eyes. It blinks. It's like your little robot pal. Curry learns your home's floor plan, where the stairs are, which room belongs to who. It learns the rhythm of your household. It can wake you automatically. It wake you in time for work, greet you when you come home at night. Now, don't worry. Curry is not going to talk to you. Curry just beeps and boops, which makes, I think, is part of the charm of Curry. Here's what Curry sounds like. This is yes, and that's no. Yes, no. It also blinks. Doesn't it? I think that was inspired. Instead of giving it a voice, it's friendly. So it connects to your Curry app. You can it does listen. One of the things Curry does is kind of cool. If it detects an unusually loud noise, it will go check it out. And Curry has cameras, and he'll send you on the app. He'll send you pictures and sound of what's going on, which is really awesome. You can also use Curry to. Like, is the dog on the couch? Go look, Curry. And Curry, when you're not home, Curry will check for you. It'll check if there's somebody at the door. You can listen to songs, audiobooks, podcasts. You can say, Curry, go into the kid's room and read the kid a story. She'll connect to any entertainment hub you have in your home. I really love it. Adorable Curry wants to be your friend, and you can pre-order it right now. Curry will be $6.99, but if you you can do a refundable pre-order of $100, pay $5.99 on shipping, so you're not on the hook until the Curry ships, as you said, Stacey, later this year. Find out more about Curry at the website heycurry.com. Hey Curry, let me do that what I just did again, Karsten, because this is kind of cool. We're going to look into Curry's brain. Hey. This is the capacitive touch sensors. Let it respond to the human touch.
This is smart.
So if you touch Curry on her head, on his head, I'm sorry, it's a he, he'll look up at you and chirp in a nice way. He'll say hi. I think it's smart to do that because I think what happens is, like with a pet, we anthropomorphize and we give Curry more personality if it doesn't have as much to begin with. You know what I'm saying? It's got HD camera, video, and stills. It can nod. It's got what they call gestural mechanics with head and eye movements that look fluid and natural. I just can't wait. Yeah, we'll get one up here and we can play with it. It's got a Ray mics, a little heart light like ET that can light up. They've been really thinking about this. Nice speakers, sounds good. Did you see Curry when you were at the
event? I did.
Yeah, really cute. Hey, so here's the deal. HeyCurry.com, H-E-Y. K-U-R-I. That's how you spell Curry. K-U-R-I.com. Check out Curry. Pre-order, $100 down. It's refundable, by the way. You know, when it's time for charging, I keep wanting to say she, goes right to his little charging pad and takes a power nap. So he's always ready to go. Your little robot pal who's fun to be with. Hey, Curry! H-E-Y-K-U-R-I.com. I really, when they called and said, you know, we'd like to do some ads because we're really excited about this and we want to kind of get the word out. I said, are you kidding? This is awesome.
So it is awesome. Yeah. I want my robots to have arms because until my robot can, you know, do laundry or put dishes away.
I know. Like, did you see the laundry machine, the folding machine that they had?
I went and looked for it. I didn't see it, but you know, two or three of the smart homes had Pepper. And I don't know if you've seen Pepper.
No, what's Pepper?
She's, She is from, it's the French robotics company. It starts with an A.
Aldebaran.
Yes, Alderaan.
Yeah.
It sounds like a Star Wars planet.
Aldebaran.
So Pepper was everywhere demoing inside people's smart home setups. And I was so excited because I thought Pepper was going to like do things, but she was just to attract, like she was like the equivalent of a booth babe.
And this is why, a robot. This is why I think that Curry's smart not to have arms and a big voice and stuff, because it promises more that it can deliver, right?
Right.
This just does, this doesn't do anything. It looks like it should do something, but all I can do is...
It does things, but yeah, it's not as cool as you would think.
Not anything useful. It doesn't mix you a drink.
That would be useful. All right.
So I think as we start these things off in the early days, it would be better not to imply you can do so much. Here's some more video of Curry from the IEEE spectrum.
Wait, no, that's
That's Pepper. Pepper, not Curry. That's an expensive toy, if you ask me.
Well, even she's their smaller one, and when you guys were talking about Curry, I didn't want to bring it up during the ad, but this same company also makes the Now NAO robot as well. It's been out for a while, but I still think even that one, which is about the size of the Curry, I think it's like $5,000-$6,000 or something.
Wow.
But it does have arms and legs. And in fact, I saw the Now. I went to Cirque du Soleil in San Francisco, and as part of their pre-show, there was these robots up on stage and they were doing all sorts of stuff. And I said, that's a Now. I tell my wife, and my wife didn't care, but I was like, hey, that's a Now. They just put like silver paint on it and stuff. And we had one of the reps for them come out and do a demonstration at our makerspace. They are pretty cool, but they're cool. They don't really, like you said, they don't fold the laundry. They don't provide healthcare. They don't, anything that you might want, a robot to do. So I think we've still got a long way to go to get to that point.
I think these are
now
just...
is greeting people in a Hilton hotel.
Oh, wow.
It's their demo. It might be a Hyatt. It's a Hilton or Hyatt. It's a deal with IBM. So Now stands up on the desk as it checks.
Hello.
It can check you in, act as a concierge.
I am Now. Welcome to the hotel. Yeah. It's not in Westworld. It ain't yet. Right.
No. I'm okay with that though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. I agree. You saw what happened in Westworld and not, don't give Now a gun. Let's just say that.
So CES, I'm going to do categories. There were lots of things for wellness and a lot of things for breathing into stuff and detecting. So Mint detects if you have bad breath, you breathe into this like thing and you go, and it's like, whoa, back off. So that's one.
They're selling this, by the way.
This is
introducing Mint. By measuring the organic compounds in your mouth released by various bacteria, it can monitor your oral health. See, that's more interesting than just saying you have bad breath. It could say you got the beginnings of gingivitis or something. I mean, that would be more useful, right? Or
yes.
Yeah. Or, well, if you do something about it.
I'm like, I would be fine just be like, God, don't talk to anybody, Stacey. Go brush your teeth. But maybe with the like gingivitis stuff, the insurance company will buy it. I don't know. So there was also a company called Level Now, LevelNow.com. And they checked for, I think it's the acetone in your
saliva. Oh, that's for ketosis.
Saliva. It's for ketosis, yes. So it's detecting if you're burning enough.
This is not
burning fat.
This is a community association management.
It's missing an E. So L-E-V-L.
Oh, you see the internet. We're running out of vowels. That's the problem.
Exactly.
I could use that though for my diabetes. That would be good.
Yeah. Ketoacidosis is actually a very dangerous condition that you can get into with diabetes. But this would it's for weight loss. So it's to help you go into ketosis, safe ketosis for weight loss. Interesting.
Which is there because there are lots of kids with like epilepsy. There actually is a diet for migraine people who suffer from migraines, and that if you're on a super low ketosis or ketosis diet, I don't know the right ketogenic diet. I think is
ketogenic.
What it is.
That's right.
Yes. So this could be useful there. So
this looks really good. I'm going to sign up right now for this.
Oh dear.
Oh, dear.
So that was cool.
Oh, dear.
This one is also good, or let me say interesting. It's called, what is it called? Leaf, L-I-E-F Therapeutics, and the website is getleaf.com.
Is a nice Scandinavian boy going to come to my house?
No.
Not that, that would be Leif. Sorry, I misspelled. Leif. That would be Leif. Leif Therapeutics. Hi.
I would buy that service.
This is Leif as in relief. I saw the ad for this. It's a biosensing patch.
Yes. And, you know, I will say with all of these, there's a fine line between wellness and actual therapeutics, right?
And there has to be, because the FDA gets involved as soon as it makes health recommendations or becomes a therapeutic device.
And, you know, this could be so much snake oil, but this was interesting because it looked at your, you wear it as a patch right underneath your chest, and it detects when you're stressed, and you're supposed to do biofeedback, and it's supposed to help improve people who are depressed or anxious. It's supposed to start training you.
Can be used with CBT, which is a cognitive behavioral therapy. It's a treatment that I know because I have a member of my family who uses CBT to control mental illness. And it's the idea is to give you tools to control your mood, your anxiety, so that you can, without medication, kind of get an even keel. So having something to say, hey, your anxiety level's going up, because you don't always notice it, would be very helpful. Yeah.
So that was that. And then there were like 9 breast pumps there. And, you know.
I'm sorry. No. I'm a man. I'm going to giggle. I apologize. I shouldn't giggle. There's nothing.
As a woman, I nurse my daughter. Let me just tell you, breast pumps are the most archaic, medieval things out there.
I remember doing this with Jennifer when Abby was born. And it was painful. And I'm watching this happen. And I'm thinking, that was invented by a man. That's what I'm thinking.
Yes. You feel like a cow.
A cow.
So,
It is derived from the same devices used on cows.
Probably, yeah.
It's a similar process. So, but my favorite was this company. It's called Willow. And what these are.
Are you expecting, Stacey? Is there a reason you have this?
No, I just, like I said, I nursed my daughter for 18
months. So you're
months
interested.
The whole time I was like, technology.
Well, for one thing, this looks a lot less like the kind of thing you milk a cow with and much more, well, like a bra, like something that would fit you comfortably.
It fits in your bra. And so this is probably TMI for your many of people in your audience, but I'm just going to tell you, when you pump, you like have to take off your clothes. You're like, there's apparatuses, there's tubes, there's a giant pump that's like this big, you guys. This is literally shell and noisy. It's like, and then there's the engine in the back. Yeah. So you can't do it in the office and be discreet. This is not a discreet process.
But this one would be. It fits in your bra.
It fits in your bra. It's quiet. I was like,
Great.
I wanted to go out and get pregnant and try it. I was like, yes.
Wow, look at that. Oh, this is going to be huge. Isn't this funny how we've suffered for so long with really primitive technology? It hasn't probably changed in 100 years. And this, of course, has its ties into your smartphone. So it has a milk tracking app. I'm not making that up.
So
I'm glad they mentioned this. Willow is for women. Okay.
You know, I'm not going to go there.
But I'm guessing it was made by a woman. And that's the one thing you immediately think when you look at the predecessors is no woman designed this. Wow, that's neat.
And it'll be out. So they're targeting, I believe, the June timeframe for this. And FDA approval.
They already have it.
Yeah, they have it. The key for this will be for widespread folks, we'll be getting insurance to cover it. But the more people who buy it, the more likely insurance is to cover it.
Is it expensive?
So, it costs about as much as a normal breast pump is the aim. So
that's right. Well, I think we rented. We didn't buy because they are expensive. I think we rented. And you're not going to use it for more than a year. So I think
we could use it for as long as you nurse, actually.
You could use it.
Yeah.
But that's roughly a year. I mean, you didn't nurse till she was 7.
I nursed for 18 months.
Okay, year and a half. Fine. That's roughly a year. All right.
No, she's
not that there's anything wrong with that.
I was like, there's a whole movement of women who do.
I know there is. And it's I'm old fashioned enough that it shocks me when a 4-year old comes up and says, I'd like to eat now, mommy. Mommy.
So I have one for Aaron. I saw these guys again and I love them. So this is it's the Next Thing Co. They make a $9 board. Yeah. So the chip, they actually introduced a more powerful $16 board that I think it may be Wi-Fi integrated on it. I'll have to double check. Yeah,
the first one had Wi-Fi. This is what it looks like right here. That's the original chip.
We've had the chip folks on. In fact,
yeah,
we had them on when they invented it. They went on Kickstarter and they brought
There's
it
the
when
one.
They came out.
Oh, I remember that thing right here. This thing, that is the Great Chip, and that is a $6 chip that is the brains behind the chip board, new, more powerful board. Sorry, that's the Chip Pro.
This is rapid, kind of like the American Raspberry Pi, Aaron, or.
Yeah, to some extent.
I got the Pocket Chip, which is cool because you get a terminal and a Linux command, and you can actually reprogram the games on it. And that's
right,
really
the Pocket
cool.
Chip was really cool. Yeah. I mean, I think that really helped them out when they launched this a few years ago.
Yeah.
But it runs Linux, and we're going to talk about a similar product later on. But it runs Linux. You can connect to peripherals. You can hook up other things. With the original model being $9 and it's Wi-Fi enabled, there's a lot you can do with it. Now, it doesn't come, it's kind of hard to hook up like an HDMI display and things like that. So, there's some, you got to kind of pick.
That's
where
one thing the Raspberry Pi is really good at. It's really a full computer ready to go out the door.
Yeah. Yeah. You can hook up an HDMI display and go.
But it's not $6.
Well, the
actually,
Pi
they have a $5
is,
now, right?
It's $5. Yeah.
So. Pi Zero is $5.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I thought that was pretty cool. All right. You want crazy smart home stuff? Or should I stop bringing stuff to you?
No, continue on. I'm having fun.
This is all cool stuff. Yeah.
Okay. I have to make fun of it because it was ridiculous. Look up the Moen. Let's see. I don't know where you're going to find it. It's the Moen faucetless shower. It's a $1,300 shower. Just Moen and CES, and you'll find the visuals for it, I'm sure. So what Moen did, Moen makes these beautiful faucets faucets.
They I have replaced. Moen. Everybody has Moen, right? In their house, right? Yeah. It's one of the big
it's
names.
Lovely.
Yeah.
So they replaced the turning on
button. Is that the one that you have where you tap your faucet?
I do. So that's capacitive touch, and that's a Delta faucet. Okay. Moen does have a capacitive touch faucet, too.
Okay.
But this is a app to go with your shower.
Oh, I don't need an app in the shower.
The button, they replaced the faucet with a button pad that has four buttons on it and a little screen. There it is. And it gives you a customized shower. So everyone's making fun of the IoT
hairbrush.
This is
the U.
Yes. Okay. Is that what it's called?
Yeah. Just the letter U. Shower like never before. Here, let's watch the video. This is the U video. It's U for you and your shower.
It's U, only wetter.
So this goes in the shower. It's waterproof?
Yes.
Wait a minute. Your phone. Wait, I don't understand. Is
your phone is not waterproof.
Your phone
is outside the shower.
Your phone is outside the shower.
You can tell it what to do.
Oh, it's got colors? You can pause your shower. This seems like maybe it's going a little far.
This is a perfect example of put a chip in it philosophy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just wait till your shower gets hacked.
I can see high-end, or mid-range to high-end hotels putting this in, their luxury suites and stuff. Something like that.
By the way, here's some good news. With a connection to the cloud, and all showers should be connected to the cloud, future updates to you by Moen Shower Setup is automatic. Automatic firmware updates for your shower, folks. That's what you've been missing.
Oh.
Holy
cow.
So
I did ask if I could tell the Echo, hey, run me a 110-degree flat shower. And they said no. That's not there.
See, that's perfect. That I would want.
That's kind of cool. It eventually it could do that. But right now what they've done is basically, and they've taken it away. There is no more faucet.
There's like no knob.
Cold. It's all those buttons.
You're right. Aaron, you nailed it. Some high-end hotel will have this.
Yeah.
You know, the Aria in Vegas or something.
Right, one exactly.
The Wind to go with their Echoes. The Wind.
Yeah. I agree with you, though, Stacey. You gave them a very good idea. Echo, turn on my shower. 109 degrees, please.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea how hot my showers are. But with
I
this,
think that's I think it's a little hot. I think I think that's scalding hot. Not it wouldn't hurt you, but it would be very hot.
Okay.
I'm thinking you're more of a 107, 108 kind of person.
Got it. I like that. All right.
But that's the beauty of it. You could actually say, no, because Lisa likes a much hotter shower than I do. And so she, you know, very, very genteelly turns the heat down before I get in, which is very nice of her. You know, because she has it really high. We have a lever that goes hot to cold. But I just know where it is on the wall. Like, oh, it's about 3 o'clock. If it's at 3 o'clock, then it's the right temperature.
Right. And usually they take a little bit to heat up, like unless you've got an instant hot water heater.
It'd be so cool to be able to say Lisa's is 110, mine's 107. That would be really cool.
All right. Wait a year and I bet Moen has that for you and you can install this thing in your shower.
I would actually buy that. Yep. I have to be able to tell it to Echo. That's why these voice things are so important, because the hub is everything. The ability to communicate with these things in a natural way is everything.
Mm-hmm.
I think. Yep. What else?
And it's the auto learning mechanism too that will eventually come, right?
Right. It should. So I shouldn't have to learn it.
Run me a shower.
I just tell it what I want.
Yeah.
It figures it out.
Yeah, we're going to go there eventually. All right, other things that I thought were cool.
This is so fun, Stacey. Thank you for bringing this stuff awesome. Back. This is great.
I'm running out of stuff. But
this is the view smarter. Of CES we didn't see. I like it. Smarter?
Smarter company. So they make the iKettle, which actually was in the news because I think it was hacked. I'll just be right up there.
Wait a minute.
They did have that. They fixed it.
What happens if your kettle gets hacked? Somebody... Brews coffee without your knowledge?
I was going to say, they burn the water through. I don't remember the hack. Everything's been hacked.
But that's the bigger... by the way, I just want to say this. The bigger problem with IoT hacking is not that somebody's going to turn on your coffee pot remotely, but that they're going to use it as a gateway into your network and then be able to plant stuff onto your network. Because this device is on your Wi-Fi and can be used, if it's got security flaws, to get into your network.
We can talk about those devices I saw too.
Oh, good.
So Smarter launched a fridge cam. Everybody, woo!
I'm excited about
fridge cams. So this is like $149.
How much could be going on in the fridge that you'd really want to see?
This is so you can check to see if you're out of milk, or do I need to pick up this, or did my teenage son eat the last of, you know, the cereal?
That is the ultimate first world problem.
It is, but you know what? First World has a lot of money, and they want to know what's in their fridge.
I don't want to get up. Just tell me what's in the fridge.
Well, it's more
but
like
if you tie it to Alexa,
store.
Then you could. I'm seeing Echo. You could say, Echo, did Henry drink all the milk? And Echo would say, I see you're down to a quarter of a gallon, Leo. And Echo, could you order me some more milk? It'll be on your doorstep tomorrow morning. That would be cool.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking. And this is kind of like, I mean, imagine, Amazon's convenience store thing that they're doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is kind of like your own personal Amazon convenience store, because you take stuff out, figures it out, it orders it for you.
It does food tracking. It does expiration dates, recipes, notifications. And somebody pointed out, it's handy not when you're home, but when you're at work and you want to know. Do I have enough
eggs? Handy when you're at the grocery store and you're like, oh, crap. Do I need to pick up this?
Yep. I've thought for a long time about building a barcode scanner system attached to the fridge so that every time you put something in, you know, when you buy it, you scan it, put it in. And then when you take it out, you scan it or whatever, and it tracks this stuff. So it's very similar to this, but it's kind of hard to do. It's hard to catch all the corner cases.
So is there a light on this fridge cam? Because John's
pointing out. When you open it, Because other thing to know is Wi-Fi in your fridge is basically a giant Faraday cage.
Oh, right.
So when you open the door,
it should be when you open it, because it doesn't change while it's not open. Nobody's coming in.
Then you have real problems.
I suddenly realized, oh, yeah, the only time the fridge contents change is when the door is open. Okay, that makes sense. It's 100 pounds. You can pre-order it now.
Yes. So, Aaron, I have something for you with your barcode scanner. It is the Genie Can. G-E-N-I can. So the idea here is it was going to be a trash can, but then that didn't work. So they are just created a camera that you stick near your waste bin, and you can, it's got a barcode scanner, so you can scan the products as you toss the package or recycle it. And I think you can also talk to it to put things on a shopping list.
I think I entered the wrong thing because I have a Kegel fitness device for your
iPhone. That's the Vibri. Someone did ask about that. We can talk about that. Genie Can is G-E-N-I-C-A-N.
Okay.
Okay. Oh, yeah. The Vagini is, it's a vibrator that they basically turned into like a Kegel exerciser.
Oh, I got it. Okay. So Genie Can makes your trash can smart?
Yeah.
And it's plugged into Amazon Dash Replenishment. So when you throw stuff away, it automatically orders it.
Okay. Let's talk trash. All right.
Grocery lists are such a pain. They're impossible to maintain, and they lack detail. Talk about detail.
Wait a minute. That is really creating a problem that does not exist. Okay. All right. So it scans what I throw in the trash can?
Yeah. And you can talk to it and say, buy more milk.
All right, wait a minute. Let's see it. Okay.
Genie Can adds.
Oh, you don't have to like. You can just throw it in.
To your bin. Say you want to add ketchup to your shopping list.
I feel like you might have to do a little bit more.
You're already going to the recycle bin. Why not add it while you're there?
Oh, that's interesting. Okay. Okay. So she held it up to the thing's hanging on a lip on your trash can, and before she throws it in, she puts the barcode in front of it, goes bling, and now it's on your list.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then you can also talk to it and reorder stuff.
Oh, you can?
I think, yes, voice recognition.
So, okay, we've come a long way if this works, because I remember I had a grocery list thing 5 years ago where you talked.
A haiku?
Something like that. It was terrible. Do you remember it?
I tested the haiku. Yeah. It had some challenges.
So maybe this is better. I mean, we have gotten better, certainly.
So imagine this. So Dash Replenishment, right? That's pretty cool. Or you just send your barcoded order to Instacart. Like, it's just happening. Look at, you don't even have to. And then, boom, it's there.
You probably want to tell them, hey, wait till I have 10 items or something, right?
Well, yes. And maybe you do it up until, like, I would check my Instacart order before I sent it on. Because, you know, sometimes you use stuff and you're like, I will never buy that product.
I just found the killer feature. It'll even text your teenager when the can is full.
Oh, there you go.
It tells your kid to empty the trash.
That's awesome.
Sold. $125 for the Genie Can.
That's not bad.
No.
No. I mean, that's well within crazy early adopter device spending range.
I love it that it ties into the Amazon Dash.
See? All right. Let's see.
Should
what
I
else
buy
was,
this? It was. Oh, what do you think? Should I? You know what I'd be afraid of? In fact, I know this would happen like the first day. It would get thrown out with the trash.
Well, you don't have to stick it right on the trash can. You could stick it near the trash can if you were worried about that.
But it wouldn't know where the trash is full if you did that.
That is true. Sorry.
I know.
If you just wanted to text your teenager, there's some sensors you could just pop on there. Exactly.
Hey, yeah. Darren, would you build me one of those?
Sure. No problem. Give me about 10 minutes.
A trash can sensor. I'm telling you could make some money on that.
Maybe.
I just see this. I know this how this would go. Hey, honey, where'd the Genie Can go? Oh, I don't know. Maybe we threw it out. Got emptied with the trash. What else?
I laugh because I've been there.
Yeah.
I threw away my wedding ring, so.
Oh, that's a little Freudian.
No, it was accidental.
Oh, that's what you're. Yeah, right.
No, it.
You're just
like, it was an expensive ring.
No, I'm sure it was accidental. But I'll tell you, if a guy loses his wedding ring, no
then
wife,
it's Freudian.
Then it's Freudian. No wife would ever let a guy get away with that. Sure, honey. Yeah. You misplaced your wedding ring. Yeah, sure, honey.
While you were in Vegas.
Well, yeah, it does depend on the setting.
All right, one more, and then honey, where'd your vagini go? I lost it.
All right, this is just cool tech. This falls under cool technology. I didn't see a lot other than the Qualcomm Glance thing, and then of this company, which is called Ultra Haptics, and basically they are doing pushed air to create haptic feedback. To create like a gesture-based controller is probably the best way to talk about it. So their demos were things like an ATM machine that you didn't have to touch. You just stuck your hand over it, and then you could enter your code. I think they had some gambling aspects.
This kind of thing with light. What is the name of that launch thing that you could buy for a Macintosh?
Leap?
Leap, that's it.
So their demos actually had a Leap Motion detecting your gesture, and what they were doing is haptic feedback. So I think I said detecting gesture. I'm sorry. You knew if you pressed pressed a button, if that makes sense. You'd feel it.
So this works with the Leap.
So yes, in their demos, it was working with a Leap. It could work with other camera systems. So I thought
Try it? What does it feel like?
It feels like someone blowing on your hand, like a lot of things. Oh, a bowling alley.
Bowling alley, hand dryer.
Imagine it's like finer bits of that air, and then you can change the pressure and at finer kind of segments. Does that make sense at all?
What? It doesn't feel like what it's supposed to be. But it's giving you feedback of some kind. I mean, it's not like it's simulating an actual feeling that you would have.
No, it's a totally different feeling. Place a fine mesh over the bowling alley thing and control each flow of air through each mesh. Oh, and so then you can.
Cool.
I thought it was really actually pretty compelling.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. The thing. If we combine Ultra Haptics with Leap Motion with the Moen faucet, smart faucet thing, nobody would ever have to touch a public restroom faucet again.
Yes.
Exactly. See?
Yes. Or garbage.
That would be pretty cool.
Or garbage.
Or like an ATM pad or your, I mean, like think elevator buttons. Oh.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of surfaces like that that get pretty grungy, as you'll find out if you have kids my age that are doing science projects for school. It seems like there's always a germ one. Somebody's doing germs, and they swab all these things, and you go look at it, and you're like, oh, that's
Michael
so
did
gross.
That. That's so funny. Michael did that.
Yeah.
It was a little weird when I came into the kitchen, and there are all these Petri dishes on the counter, and they're all growing stuff.
Yeah.
Don't brush. Tell me what that one came from. I don't want to know.
Your toothbrush.
Ah! Hey.
All right.
Thank you for that IoT tour. You got any? Is that it? Or you? I don't want to cut you off.
No. I mean, you know, at CES, there's like gajillions of devices. I'll say two things. Air quality sensing, very, very hot. Many devices there.
Yes.
And then
because they're being made in China where you can't breathe the air.
Yes,
they need that.
So, I did meet a lot of things that will take your job. So
not my job.
Not your job, Leo.
Nobody could take my job.
I don't know. Curry might get up here and...
Yeah, hey, Curry.
Tell me about what's going on in Google.
That's really
and
odd.
And it'll say... Boop, 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 boop.
Oh, that's true. Of course, Curry would stick to Google, so some people might be happy.
Yeah. Let's take a break. Come back with more. There's a lot of stories, and I know we wanted to talk about the Google Hangouts API. Sad story there. Changes at Google. Google Tango. Lots to talk about. But first, a word from a sponsor that's been, we haven't seen these guys in a while. We're glad to welcome them back. LegalZoom.com. I think you know I've been a fan of LegalZoom forever. LegalZoom helped me get this business started and helped me do the paperwork and all the stuff I needed to do to incorporate. Start of a new year is a great opportunity to hit the reset button for a fresh start for you, your business, your family, whether it's taking control of your family's future with an estate plan or getting your dream business up and running, don't let the legal questions that you might have hold you back. LegalZoom was created over 15 years ago to provide you with the tools, the confidence, the know-how to wrap up your legal needs without the expense of going to a white shoe law firm. It's not a law firm. LegalZoom is not a law firm. So no hourly fees. Instead, you get legal advice at flat rates from their network of attorneys in 48 states. They will help you with the right estate plan. They will help you answer questions you have for running your business. And, of course, LegalZoom can get you all the paperwork you need, get it all done fast at a much lower cost. I'm telling you, as a regular LegalZoom user for my will, for my corporation, I am a fan, and I have been for years. Make 2017 the year you get your life in order. LegalZoom.com. Special savings when you use the offer code TWIG at checkout. LegalZoom.com. We love them. We've been using them for years. Since 2005, I've been a LegalZoom customer. We're talking about Google this week in Google with Stacey Higginbotham of StaceyOnIoT.com. Back from CES. Aaron Newcomb and I are just sitting watching.
Yeah. Enjoying all the cool gadgets and stuff. That's awesome. Yeah,
really fun stuff.
I'm going to let y'all talk now.
Do you go to CES every year or is this?
I've been for 3 years.
3 years.
Now.
Okay.
So I had to pick it up when Kevin stopped.
Yeah. So this is it's kind of new for you. I asked Paul Thurrott, who hasn't been there in 5 or 6 years. I said, has it changed? He says, it's exactly the same. So I haven't, because I haven't been in a few years. We used to go every year and we'd had a big booth there and everything, cover it. But the problem is we had a couple of just boring CESs in a row. And I thought, you know, why am I spending all this money to cover, you know, iPhone cases? I'm not that interested. But this seemed like a year with some very interesting stuff.
I think you just have to search it out. I mean, people say that same thing about South By. They're like, oh, it's so corporate now.
Right.
And I'm like, there are always cool people doing crazy stuff pretty much everywhere. So I don't know. Maybe I just like find those people because I'm...
You're just so positive and cool and great. I'm just a curmudgeon.
You should have seen me Thursday afternoon at CES. I was like, I'm done. I don't care your Bluetooth thing.
Were there any rides in self-driving cars there for you?
You know, I didn't do that. The car section was huge. Oh, I forgot about a really cool thing. Can I tell you? Because it has huge, great applications for like real people.
Of course.
Plot. P-L-O-T-T. It is a...
Wait a minute. Don't tell us. Okay Aaron, let's play a little game. What do you think Plot does?
I think it is a...
Don't look at the screen.
I'm not looking.
I don't think that's actually helpful.
without looking, kind of I'm going to say it's a garden monitoring system that monitors water and soil composure.
Oh,
so the product is actually called Cubit. I'm sorry. The company's name is
No, that's a clue. Don't say anymore.
Okay.
Cubit. See, that goes with what I was thinking, because I thought it was a way to measure yourself for your cemetery plot. And that goes right in there with a cubit. So what is Plot really?
It's hard to say because it is more than just a tape measure.
I wasn't too far off, actually, was I?
You were. So the idea behind this is it's got the form factor of a tape measure. It uses lasers to detect distance like straight lines, right? But underneath, you can't see, there's a wheel, and it uses that. It uses the wheel to do like irregular surfaces, so you could roll it up if you were like measuring a sleeve. So the device itself is about like creating accurate measurements. What's cool is the software. Basically, it plots out where you need to put things. So if you wanted to do like the wall of frames, this is a great example, actually. Okay. You don't have to figure out the math of like, I want to put this here. Just say, I want to center this in this room. You take the measurements with the plot, and then you roll it up the wall, and it starts beeping when it's in the center. Or if you want it, you know, wherever you want it. And then it also...
Well, how do it know?
You take a picture and it maps it.
Oh.
This is really interesting. So, like, wow. I thought this was freaking awesome.
Wow.
And I don't even want to do a frame wall. But, like, hanging these shelves behind me, you know, they're free-form shelves. And, you know, something like that would have been great to make sure, A, it was level, B, they were in the right spot on the wall. Because you can tell it where, like, you want to put your nails in the picture.
Oh, this is really cool.
Mm. Yeah, it is.
Yeah. I mean, you would use it once every 5 years. I guess if you're a contractor, you'd use it more often.
I think it was like $100 or something.
Okay, so it's just as, twice as expensive as a really good tape measure.
And it does the math for you. Like, I cannot overestimate how important it is that it does the math for you.
Right.
I don't know. I hang pictures all the time.
Because you could use a laser level, for example, but you still don't know the spacing and where to nail things.
It's doing this almost in three dimensions. Oh, that's really cool.
You could use it for furniture placement too.
Yeah.
Or bathtub placement.
So I've seen there are apps that will, you take a picture of a room and it kind of makes a 3D model of it roughly accurately. You can do measurements by taking pictures, but I guess having the wheel makes it more accurate.
Yeah, did you see him? He just measured that bathtub.
Yeah.
And was like, where is it going to go?
Yeah. That's kind of cool.
I don't know.
I could see a pro getting a lot of use out of this.
Yeah. Or an interior designer et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
What they need is to be able to do that and then upload everything into like a 3D design tool so that you can walk into an empty space, take all your measurements. I mean, that's basically what you do anyway, right? But this would automate the process.
Right.
So all your measurements and all that stuff that you want to do just gets uploaded to whatever tool it is.
And then you can say, hey, well, I want them evenly spaced. I want them centered on the wall. I want them up and down. I think that's hard to do that stuff.
You could email it to the Container Store, and then they would plan out your perfect closet.
Ooh.
And that, see, like, think about if you're a business like that.
Ooh.
Home Depot.
Yeah.
Oh.
They could send you a plot and just say, hey, measure it.
Oh, my God. You send them your plot things and your Pinterest page, and boom, it just comes in the mail. All the things you want.
Now we're cooking with gas.
All right.
I wonder if they'll have a problem with the name, though. I mean, there's already a Qubit out there. Which is another microcontroller product.
Oh,
I know the owner. In fact, I think you had him on at some point.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I wonder if they'll, there's a lot of qubits out there, though. There's probably not enough, not enough to worry about, but interesting.
And there's also qubit with Qs.
Yeah.
So.
Oh yeah. The qubit.
I'm like, I don't remember.
And there's a board game, I think, right? Called Qubit.
Okay, I think this is such a generic trademark now, we don't have to worry about it.
Don't have to worry about it.
Nope.
I think it was an ancient unit of measurement, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, qubit. Okay. That too.
What's a qubit, Jonah? Remember Jonah, the Cosby routine? God? Yes, Jonah. What's a qubit? You don't remember that? Noah.
No.
Not Jonah.
Yeah, Noah.
Noah.
Oh, okay.
Jonah was the whale. Noah was the ark. Got it.
Yep.
I would play it, but it's not really done to play Cosby routines anymore on the on the air. finally, a use for Tango. Speaking of, I guess this is kind of related. Google Tango, a partnership between GuidiGo and the Detroit Institute of Arts. When you go to the museum, you can ask for one of those Lenovo Fab 2 Pros, which is a kind of the first Tango phone. And you take it, and you can see on the video what the guy's doing. He's looking at a mummy and then using the augmented reality on the phone to see the skeleton inside. That is really cool. So I've been asking all along, I'm not sure I understand what you would use Tango for. This is probably one of the best uses of it in museums.
And it seems like Google is really hot on developing this. I mean, I know just because I'm in the job market, I've noticed that they're hiring several Tango, you know, several people for Tango on their website. So, I mean, they got to do something, right? I mean, the hardware is pretty much static at this point or very low incremental changes between hardware platforms. So you got to develop the software. You've got to develop or add something like the sensors to get people interested, I think, at this point.
Kind of a weird story, and I immediately went to my Google Voice page, which, because I'm a Fi user, I had to kind of negotiate around to get to it. A number of people pointed out to the Droid Life blog that there, when they went to their Google Voice page, see, I'm going to it now and I'm getting redirected to Fi, and then I go down here and I hit click Google Voice, but I'm not getting it. Nope, not yet, but they're getting it. They're getting, you have, the new Google Voice is here. Try now. But what is the new Google Voice? When they tried it, the page just refreshed and they got didn't get anything up newer. But Google has it has in fact confirmed that it's working on updates to Google Voice. Hallelujah! Because I've used Google Voice from the day they bought Grand Central. That's where they got Google Voice. I love it. And that's still the phone number I use as my main phone number. And I've been deathly afraid that with the advent of Fi and the deprecation of Google Voice, that it was just going to disappear. But it sounds like Google might have plans for Google Voice. They would not tell TechCrunch when, but they said they are working on updates to Google Voice.
Yeah, that's actually really good news. I mean, I also have been a Google Voice subscriber since the beginning. Yeah. You know, I use it for my cell phone primary number. I use it for my home phone primary number. So I never have to worry about moving or changing numbers or anything like that. And I'm always like, oh, this is like dying to be integrated. They finally integrated it with Hangouts several years ago, right? Of course, now there's problems with Hangouts. But you know, they finally integrated it with Hangouts, and it's just one of those things that's just dying to be more integrated into the rest of the Google ecosphere, if you will. So I can't wait to see what they're doing with it. I just hope that they do it right and that it's something that's going to be useful. Because that we've all been disappointed by these Google rumors in the past.
Lots of people who are listeners to the show and in the chat room too say, yeah, I would be devastated to lose Google Voice, and I've been worried about that. Especially, see, if you get a Fi phone, are you a Fi user, Aaron?
I am not. Yeah. I could be.
That was one of the things that almost stopped me from doing it. But I have the Pixel. Actually, I had a Nexus 6, and I got Fi. Actually, I think I got Fi on the Nexus. The Nexus 6. Mm-hmm. And the first thing they say is, okay, you have two choices. You can either port your Google Voice number over to make it your Fi number, or you can say bye-bye to your Google Voice number. So that I actually held off for a while because I knew that was what was going to happen. And finally said, all right. And I ported it over to Google Fi. But so far, all the voice capabilities are still there. As you saw, you can go to your Fi page at the very bottom. You can click Google Voice and you can get to your Google Voice page and still do all the things Google Voice does. But I just felt like this is the beginning of the end. Crossing my fingers.
I would be sad.
Yeah.
I too have a Google Voice number that I've had for a long time, and
it's my public number. It's the number I give everybody because I thought, oh, the last number I'll ever need, and I'll just have it forward to whatever phone I'm using it at any given moment, which is exactly what I do. You're not a Google Fi user either, Stacey?
I am not.
Yeah, I think Jeff is. I seem to remember
Jeff is. Yes, Jeff is. He talks about it a lot.
It's great for traveling, you know. And then very sad news, I guess. And this is another one of those Google things that, you know, they're all hot and excited about it. And then they lose interest over a couple of years. You remember that Google Hangouts had all these wild, crazy things you could do in the Google Hangouts video calls, conference calls. Everything from put a mustache on to play ping pong. Google has announced that they are going to shut down the Hangouts API, which will prevent new apps from being built and turn off all existing apps on April 25th. So, bye-bye. I read something interesting that makes a lot of sense to me because we've complained bitterly about Google's very confused messaging over messages. It's SMS apps. You know, Allo can't be an SMS app, but Facebook's Messenger can on Android devices. All Android phones typically come with Google's SMS app messages and an SMS map called Messages from the manufacturer like Samsung or LG. So I have like four or five candidates for SMS messaging, including Hangouts. So what is Allo? What is Hangouts? What is their intent? Which of these should I use? It's very messed up. And what I read, and I think it was probably on a Reddit thread talking about this Hangouts API, is it's probably for antitrust reasons. Google's reluctant That which makes sense, right? That if they were to say, no, this is the messaging app, everybody uses Android should use this messaging app, that would be an antitrust problem. Don't know. But that it has to be some external force. Surely Google knows what a hash they've done of this.
Yeah, well, you would hope
so. Apple has their own messaging thing. They control their physical hardware to a greater extent than Google.
That's a very good point. Apple does have one messaging app. It does SMS and data messaging. It's not cross-platform. You have to use... It's cross-platform to the extent that it interoperates with the SMS network.
Right.
But you can't get Apple messages on Android. So you're right. So maybe... never mind. Because Apple's not being sued.
But Apple isn't like the king of search and all kinds of crazy productivity apps either. So yeah. I don't know.
Right.
Antitrust is going to be hard to determine as
what's going to happen converged. Going forward. We don't know.
Yeah.
We are in such... It's really... I've been talking about this a lot with friends and family off the air. It's just unknown what's going to happen in 10 days. What the world's going to look like.
Terra incognita.
I said this morning in the chat room, I said, I really wonder what a year from now, what our top news stories will be. You know, what we'll be talking about on January 10th or January 11th, 2018. Could just be like this. Probably there'll be some Google technology that they're deprecating.
I'm like, there's deadly silences. We're all like, we can't even imagine.
We can't.
And some of us don't want to imagine.
Well,
I don't want to go there.
I'm it's willing for it to be good. I don't know. I'm just wait and see what happens, I guess. Project Aura, another one of those Google projects everybody was excited about. This was the Motorola R&D project, the modular camera that Google kept when they sold Motorola. And, of course, it's gone. Good story on Android Central of how Aura came and went.
I loved this project. I was so sad.
I did.
Yep.
I did.
No, Leo, you hated it. You said it was stupid.
I was, because look at this phone. This is why. Look at that phone. Do you want that phone? Is that the phone you want? And remember, so Aura, the idea was you have modules. The whole phone's made up of modules. And you build the phone of your dreams. If you really want a great camera, you put that in. If it's not as important to you as a big battery, you put that in. But you know these wouldn't fit together tightly. They'd be all janky and wobbly. It'd feel like, you know, remember those number games where you had to slide the numbers around and get them in order? It'd feel like that.
Mm-hmm. So is this a VentureBeat story or is this a Android Authority story? Because the long epic story
seems you're right.
To be
it's
on
a VentureBeat. Thank you. Let's give credit to VentureBeat.
I'm just like, they did the reporting, so...
Yeah, this is... I get bit by this all the time where a blog will come along and say, and rehash the story and get all the credit and the links. So let's do the VentureBeat story. Yeah. In fact, let's give credit to Harrison Weber, who did a lot of good reporting on this. So
yay, reporters.
Yay, reporters. What will we do without you? You are the grist to our mill.
I think this was a good idea when they came up with it, right? Because phones were iterating quickly. And so you buy a phone and then, you know, the next month, the new phone would come out and have twice as much memory and all of these features and hardware features that you didn't have. And so I go back to what I said before. I mean, the phones aren't iterating like they used to. And so it takes away a lot of the need, I think, to have a phone like this where you can switch things out. Granted, customization is... you know, maybe important, but I think a lot of the impetus for this was, you know, that just phones are changing. You want the latest Wi-Fi technology. You could get the module and replace the one that you had with something better, like you said, a better camera or something like that. I just don't think that, I think that the speed of the way things are iterating has slowed down to the point that there's just no need for, there wouldn't be a demand for it.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
And one of the problems that Motorola had with it is, well, it's a nice idea. Dennis Woodside, the CEO at the time of Motorola, it's a nice idea, but real people don't want to assemble their own smartphone. They just want to go to the store and get one. And I think he's probably right. But we would have liked it, right?
Yeah, this reminds me, like when you said that, I was like, oh, that's exactly why I used to build my own PCs, because then you'd swap stuff out. And then I'm like, when people were like, nobody back in the day.
Nobody does
that. You build your own PCs? Yeah. What?
What? Why would you do that, man? What are you crazy?
That's weird.
What's a PC?
I think they knew what PCs were. I could be wrong.
Actually, I guess what Motorola is doing with those snap-on backs for the Motorola Z is kind of that.
Mm-hmm. And those are neat.
Yeah, and
I don't have the phone.
But I don't either. Actually, I've been really tempted because the Z Play has really good battery life, and it'd be kind of fun to have those backs. They've promised to do like one a month for a while. Mm. Like, you know, there'll probably be a lot of them. Anyway, Project Ara, another one bites the dust.
That was not the song.
I don't know what you were singing.
I don't know what you were singing. You want to talk about Waymo?
Waymo, which is a better name. I like the name because it's Waymo better name for the Google self-driving car project.
Yes, which is now its own company in Alphabet.
Yeah. And they're going to start test driving a minivan later this month. That doesn't look at all geeky.
It's pretty ugly compared to the, what was the other one that just came out? The Fairchild?
Faraday's not real.
Faraday.
That's a concept car.
Faraday's an imaginary car. Did you see that one at all? You didn't do any car stuff, did you, Stacey?
I didn't. There's only so many miles I can walk in a day or two days.
They're not selling it yet, but they've done drive offs. What do you call that? They've driven it against other, even the Tesla, and they claim that it outperforms the Tesla. They're claiming that it's not a fastest car.
Yeah.
Highly controlled environment, of course, but I mean they did show off a real car.
And they have 64,000 orders at $5,000 a pop. The thing is, as a Tesla owner, I think Stacey, you probably would agree with me. The kind of the fundamental thing that Tesla did isn't that hard. It's a golf cart with a shell on it and a big computer system. Making 100,000 of them is hard. You know, at a reasonable price that's reliable, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So making one or two of these, it's not electric motors are really simple.
Mm-hmm. You could pop them into all there's so many customization shops you can pop. They'll turn your old car electric.
Right. I think now that the Gigafactory is in production, Tesla's really going to have a lock on this just because they can make the batteries cheaper. They've integrated the whole process.
And they also want to sell it. Don't they want to sell the batteries from the Gigafactory to other companies? Yeah. Tesla's always been we'll share this.
Yeah. Which is nice. Anyway, we'll see. Faraday Future, a number of people said, we'll believe it when we see it. It's beautiful.
I don't know. I mean, they showed off some pretty cool stuff. I like the valet parking feature they showed, which I don't think is going to be available. But, you know, you get out of your car and you say, go park yourself. Excuse me. And, it just goes off and finds a parking space in the parking lot. And they actually demoed it, live demo.
Tesla can do that, too.
You can get out and say, Tesla, go around the block and find a parking space.
Well, in theory, you can't do it with stock software now, but they've shown that it doing it. And of course, the summon feature is the reverse of that, isn't it? Summon feature comes out of your garage and comes to you.
So they showed off both of those features in a live demo, which was, it could have been rigged or whatever, but I thought it was pretty cool.
Oh, that's true. That means they have some pretty good software.
Yeah. And the LiDAR that they have built in, pops up out of the hood, basically.
But remember that when they tried to do that self-parking thing at CES, it failed.
Which one? Tesla or?
Faraday Future.
The demo that I saw, it worked. It didn't go in the spot that they wanted it to, but that's because it found a better spot. It was kind of interesting. So I would recommend to people to go watch it. I thought they did a pretty good job in the demo of explaining some of the features. I don't doubt that they're way off in terms of timeline with when they can actually produce a car that is on the market that can do this. But their test vehicles seem to work fairly well. Because I thought the same thing. I heard lots of poo-pooing about the Faraday before they had this demo, but they seem to actually have proven a lot of the concepts that they've been talking about.
Yeah, I only heard about this failed one, and I guess subsequently they did it again or something because this thing, as I remember, just stopped. And that was that.
It might have on the first attempt. Yeah. I watched it after the fact. Hang on, I got to take off my phone off
the
hook.
We're just, you know, I'm just a highly competitive Tesla owner.
Yeah.
I already bought my electric car. Don't make another one. Stop it.
Yeah, well, there's no doubt. I mean, I think Faraday is going to be hard-pressed to catch up with Tesla.
And there need to be more. And you're right, Stacey. Elon's always said, you know, let a thousand flowers bloom. Let's we'll show you how we did it. So Waymo,
I can't wait for my Model 3.
Did you order a Model 3?
I did.
You luck out. So who gets the Model 3, you or your husband?
I'm going to take it because I injured my Tesla again. That car is just too big for me.
Yikes.
I am a small car person.
Yeah.
So.
Actually, the way this is going, it might be your daughter that gets it.
No, it's going to be out in 2018. I'm going to get my car this year or next. Okay.
Speaking of Waymo. Self-driving cars, we'll talk about Waymo first, and then I'll mention the fact that Apple's Chris Lattner, who is I'm doing it now, so I'll go ahead and finish.
Yes.
who is a legend because he created LLVM when he was a grad student at the University of Illinois in 2000, was hired by Apple 3 years later, went on to create Swift and Clang, announced he was leaving Apple on Tuesday afternoon. We got the press release. He's going to Tesla as VP of Autopilot Software. But he's not the only guy who left Apple. There's a footnote to this. The guy who designed the MacBooks or helped design the MacBooks is also going to Tesla to work on hardware. Mm. So Tesla continues to poach from Apple. Mm. Now, let's talk about Waymo.
So I think the big news here was that it's got its own suite of sensors and it brought the cost of LiDAR down by 20%.
90%. Yeah.
Wow. Which is a lot because you need to have LiDAR. That's the laser thing that sits on top of the cars and is like, here's what the world around you looks like.
The Tesla does not have LiDAR. It has radar and ultrasound or supersonic or something.
Ultrasonic
mm-hmm. and cameras. But it does a good job with that. LiDAR is even better though, right? LiDAR builds a 3D model of the world around the car.
I have no idea which is better.
LiDAR is better, but it's more expensive. That's why this price thing is so important.
It was $75,000 on the original Google self-driving car. It's now $7,500. That is a significant drop, in, as you said, 90% drop.
Yeah, and I think the big disruptions we're going to see happening in tech, I feel like, and I even saw this at CES, a lot of the technology and things we want is invented. The big challenge is going to be things like price.
Right.
So I saw a robotic arm there for $10,000 with computer vision. And that is so disruptive because they're normally like $50,000 or more. Wow. So this was just a typical manufacturing arm, cheap as anything. I could build a manufacturing plant. I don't know what I'd make.
Yeah. Wow, that's amazing.
So these are the kind of things like, I feel like when we're looking for the next big thing in tech, we actually should probably be looking for the next big thing in economics.
Right.
Which is way less exciting.
Right. Who was it? Neal Stephenson said the future is here already. It's just not evenly distributed.
Right. Was that him?
Somebody. Not Neal Stephenson.
Somebody said that.
Somebody.
Sounds like it could be, though.
Heinlein.
Sounds like
something you would say. Was it Heinlein? No, that was the Magic Corp.
Guy. Yeah. That's no, that was... let me just type the... Actually, I could probably ask Google.
My money's on William Gibson, actually.
Who said the future is already here? It's just not evenly distributed. See if she says anything.
According to Goodreads, quote by William Gibson, the future.
Very good.
It's just not even.
And then who said any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic?
Arthur C. Clarke.
Ah! Yeah.
Oh! Same generation. Dang it.
Those old timey guys.
I would fail on your trivia team. All right.
Don't you love Google?
I do.
The fact that I can do that is amazing.
I will say, that's where Google Home shines over the
that's
Echo.
Right.
And I saw that you were upset that there weren't enough things, or on the show notes, there's a thing about Google Home not having enough is it apps, participants, things that work with it?
Well, remember, Echo's 2 years older. I mean, Google Home came out on the Echo's second birthday. Talk to me in 2 years.
Well, in like the, what was it called? The Echo. It came out in December, that first initial version, December 2014, I think. And it wasn't until March that you actually got a lot of the smart home capabilities.
Right. Right.
So like.
It just takes time. People have to add, you know, there were only 400 or 500 skills in the first year of Echo. And now there's over 7,000.
Talking to people who are working with both companies in the like smart home space, the challenge, so what they say is the big difference is Amazon knows what it wants and how to like, it knows how it wants things to work. Google's still trying to figure that out, which makes it hard to actually implement some of these things for companies who are trying to work with it.
Yeah, you get the feeling Jeff Bezos is dialed in and it, no, in a way that no one at Google is dialed in. There's no person at Google who says, we're, you know, it used to be Larry and Sergey, I guess, and then it was Eric Schmidt. I don't think Sundar Pichai is saying, is Google still responsible for Google Home, right? That's a Google company.
Yeah, I think, isn't it Rick Osterloh? Because he's in charge of all their hardware.
Yeah, he's in charge of hardware, yeah.
So I don't know who's in.
You need the visionary. You need the Steve Jobs or the Jeff Bezos or the Mark Zuckerberg. You need the one guy who says, no, no, this is a priority. This is what we're going to do.
Or girl.
And you know what? Marissa Meyer is now available.
Yeah, that's true.
She is now, once the deal closes for Yahoo, she'll be off the board as well as leaving as CEO. What remains of Yahoo, the stake in Alibaba, will now be called Altaba.
What? Where did that come from?
They had another name too. Wait a minute. Let me see if I can find that. Because they did. That wasn't the only choice. They had another name that they were thinking about.
So it's only the investment group.
It's just the Alibaba stake and the Yahoo, wherever, you know.
Yahoo Japan and Alibaba.
Right. Yeah. There was another name. What was it? Before there was Altaba, it was like Abba. Alibaba. Something.
Well, and maybe this means something in another language or doesn't mean something. I don't know.
Anyway, we don't have to mention it because there'll be no news about Altaba that will be germane to us, I don't think. So, like I said, Marissa Meyer's available.
True. Dan Primack, who I adore and is the smartest person when it comes to private equity VC, says that, you know, she'll be snapped up quickly by a PE firm.
So they're, you know, a good CEO. And man, you need the visionary. I'm telling you, I think you need the visionary.
Yeah, but you also need the executioner. That doesn't actually
you need
fit
the executioner as well.
That is actually what they do.
That's exactly what you need.
You need the executionist. In other words, you need someone that can execute on those plans and carry them out. And I think that's where Google falls down. They've got a lot of great ideas, right? But they don't follow them through. They don't figure out how to connect things together.
I don't think that's so when you say executionist, I think of a Tim Cook type, a COO, a guy who can make things happen. But to me, the executionist is a person who has enough vision to say, this is what we're doing and this is how all of these pieces fit into it.
Yeah. And it's that second part of what you just said that Google falls down on.
They don't do it. They throw a lot of spaghetti against the wall, but they never tie the strands together or weave them together.
As it were.
As it were. All right.
Oh, speaking of, I was going to say CEOs. Did you see that John McFarlane stepped down from Sonos?
What does that mean? Now, he was one of the founders, founded it 14 or 15 years ago. Really, it's an unusual company. They never took investment. It was bootstrapped. It's in Santa Barbara, not Silicon Valley. They succeeded because they made a product people love. And actually, the article I read about it said the real secret was you buy one, and I know this was true for me, and you like it so much, you buy another. Every room ends up having it. It's what happened with the Echo, too.
It sounds like, reading the interviews, he had wanted to step down for a while. His wife was fighting breast cancer and whatnot. He stayed on because of the challenge of the Echo. But he admitted, I think it was in the New York Times, actually, he admitted that he didn't see the Echo for what it was. and the challenge it would be for its business. He just saw it as a crappy speaker.
Yeah.
And he was like, eh. And I think that realization is one of the reasons he's stepping down. He's like, oh, I don't got this anymore.
That was my take too, was, but he doesn't have it anymore because he really is focused on his family and his wife.
Right.
And bully for him. I'm, you know what? They had a billion-dollar year last year.
Yeah.
Wow.
I have six Sonoses in my house. So, yes, I like you, Leo. I'm like, oh. And
Echo
I would
and Sonos. But that's why you and I are both dying, and it's supposed to happen this year.
I can't wait.
Then I'm done. And if
my home is smart enough.
Then I'm done. No, if we're Google Home that did it, it didn't matter. Whoever did it, I would be able to say, hey, play David Bowie on my living room Sonos. I'm done.
That is really the dream.
Yep. I would love it if I could say, listen to my Audible book on my living room Sonos. And that's where Echo might have an advantage.
That would be really awesome, too. Yeah.
Well, can't you already do that, though, with the Chromecast audio? Now, granted, it doesn't work with Sonos, but...
If you want
that functionality, you could do it. Could you plug in an external back end?
You have to make a for Sonos anyway.
Yeah.
You have to make a back end. I guess how would Echo control Chromecast? Is there a Chromecast interface?
No, I mean with Google Home you can do it.
Oh, with Google Home I could do it. Oh yeah, that was one of the things they sold of it, didn't they? Yeah.
Yeah.
Cast this to my living room TV.
Yeah. You can say exactly what you just said.
It never quite worked though. I have a problem with all of these casting things.
It works for me.
Like all the time, like you see the living room and you pick it and it just goes and it starts and everything works.
Yeah.
Do you have the new one? Because I think they improved some of the networking features, like the Wi-Fi and radio stuff on the new one.
I have both the new one and the old one. And it typically works just about every time.
The old one's real iffy for me. I'm with Leo and the old one is just kind of like... My husband even liked it for a while, and then he's like, you know what? Don't buy me the upgrade. I don't want it.
It drives me crazy because I can see it, and the device can see it. And I say, cast to the living room TV, and it goes, okay, and then it spins, and then the TV goes like this, and then the spin, and it just never ends.
I do get that occasionally. Every once in a while, it'll happen.
Well, we've talked before. You haven't been here, but on this show, but I have the worst, most Wi-Fi hostile environment, and I don't know why.
Mm. Are you still blasting it with the Orbeez?
Yes, that works. But you know what I ended up doing is disconnecting every other, you know, I mean, like I really narrowed it down, just this, and it works. And my mom, I gave my Eero's to my mom, and it's working perfectly. Mm. She loves it. It's a huge, because she couldn't. She's mostly in the house, but she has a studio out back where she paints and weaves. And she stopped going out there because she couldn't use her iPad out there. So I put, you know, the Eero on the router, the Eero in the front room, the Eero in the kitchen, and then the Eero in the studio, and then the Eero upstairs, and it all works perfectly now, smoothly and flawlessly. I don't understand why, but there's something about my house. There's too much stuff in there, I think. Too many wireless devices.
RF interference.
Yeah.
I have that in my I call it my server closet, but it's really now my hub closet. So I feel
so jealous that you have a hub closet. When you built the house, did you build the hub closet intentionally?
I built my house in 2012. So we put Cat 6 cable through. We put Ethernet in every room. No jacks, no telephone jacks. And then I had
that's hysterical. You put no telephone jacks.
We have, and what's funny is there is an elevator shaft. We didn't put the elevator in because we don't need it yet. But if we had, we would have had to put a telephone in the elevator to deal with like building code regulations because every elevator has to have a physical telephone. But AT&T actually doesn't want to install copper telephone jacks. So it was like this big like, what are we going to do?
Do you have an elevator now?
No, I don't.
You just have a shaft. You got the shaft?
I got the shaft. one day when I break my foot again, I'm going to be like, dang it, now's the time. Let's put in the elevator. But until then.
My husband got, it sounds like a country song. It's very Austin. My husband got the elevator and I got the shaft.
Yeah.
It's yours. Take it. Run with it.
That should be your next show. Stacy gets the shaft. I just want a little shout out to Mike Masnick, who we love. He's been on our shows before. He's the guy who blogs at Tech Dirt. And really, you know, Mike is an outspoken son of a gun, and that's why we love him. And he says, tells it like it is. And he is now being sued. There's a guy going around, Shiva Ayyadurai, who claims he invented email in like 1978 or something. Which, of course, is on the face of it kind of absurd because email's been around a lot longer. This guy says, well, but maybe he, I don't know, maybe he invented it independently. I don't know. But he's been going around and says he invented email when he was 14 years old, working at a small medical college in New Jersey. He created a messaging system for doctors, called it email, and copyrighted it as such in 1978. Of course, there are many earlier ones. And Mike, in fact, Ray Tomlinson, the guy who invented the at sign, invented that like 20 years earlier. Mike Masnick has called this guy a liar on Tech Dirt and so forth. 14 posts over 2 years. So now Ayyadurai is suing Mike and Tech Dirt for $15 million. He's represented by the guy who shut down Gawker.
This makes me so angry. And if some First Amendment right company or even like the New York Times does not step up to help Mike, this strategy is the same thing that shut down Gawker, and we can say what we'd like about it. But this is going to shut people. This is going to cause smaller publications to censor themselves.
Yeah. You know, it'd be awesome if Peter Thiel kind of gave Mike some money to defend himself.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
No, I guess not. In fact, you know, who know? I mean, I don't know if Thiel helped. I think that's just a coincidence.
Thiel did. Thiel admitted that he helped Terry Bollea. I mean, that's
Hulk Hogan, Sue Gawker using Charles Harder. But there's no reason to assume that he's helping Harder sue Mike Masnick. That's not the same kind of thing. Yeah,
he's got Harder now has money because that case was won, and also he's got a playbook now for going after media companies. And you know, Mike.
Well, and to be fair, Mike Masnick wrote in November in a blog post, "Congratulations, Peter Thiel, about the settlement with Gawker. You've successfully censored true stories reported by the press, and now it's Mike's turn." And Mike says, "We're truly a small and independent media company. We do not have many resources. We intend to fight this baseless suit because of the principles at stake, but we have no illusions about the cost." And I can tell you, you know, from my own experience, it could easily exceed $1 million. Even if we win, it'll be a distraction no matter what happens. It already has been, which may have been part of Ayyadurai's intent.
It totally is.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a chilling effect. You know, I didn't have any love for Gawker, and so I have to confess that I wasn't completely unhappy about the lawsuit. But, yeah, you got to defend the First Amendment. You got to defend the right for...
And Mike is a quintessential public interest reporter. Yes. He reports for the consumer against companies that have every interest in silencing him.
Yes. This is Tech Dirt is no gossip blog. This is a very, very important blog. So, Mike, if you're listening, whatever we can do to help, let me know. And if you should decide to set up a legal defense fund, we'll be glad to not only contribute.
I will send you money, Mike.
Yeah, but to publicize it as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll tell people I'm sending you money.
Yeah. Well, let's take a break, and we can wrap this up with picks or tips or anything you're interested in. Man, we had a lot of picks from you, Stacy, so if you wanted to take the week off, you could.
Oh, do you not want my picks?
No. No.
Because I have some.
No, I want your picks.
We didn't talk about the Washington Post story about the Best Buy technician.
Okay.
Because this is highly relevant.
If you are a technician and you see some child pornography on a hard drive and you report it to the FBI, well, that's one thing. If the FBI then starts to pay you, are you now working for the FBI? In which case, wouldn't you need a search warrant to look at the hard drive? That's the question at the heart of this story.
I feel like the question at the heart of the story is probably, can the FBI take evidence from paid informants? In this case, it's Best Buy, but imagine if they had paid informants at Amazon listening to your searches, or paid informants working on the AI team at Nest that sees your camera.
Well, they've always had paid informants.
Well,
that's not illegal. However,
they didn't have,
at this point, they're in effect performing illegal searches on the FBI's behalf.
Right.
And that's where it's a problem. It's one thing if you hire a guy who's mobbed up and say, wear a wire, and we're going to give you, you know, $10,000 to wear that wire. That's one thing. I don't think that's illegal, but I'm not a lawyer. Is that illegal? But this is different. This is a like a fishing expedition. Look at every hard drive and see if you find anything illegal. If you do, we'll give you some money.
But is that what's happening, or are they just seeing something and reporting a crime?
Well, that's the question.
No, they are paid informants.
At one point, where do you cross that line? And obviously, if you're getting paid by the FBI,
that's the question.
Then you've crossed.
It is completely legal for Best Buy technicians to look at your hard drive because they're a private company. You've authorized it. And so that's not, the law doesn't prohibit private searches. But as soon as a court could say, well, but because you're paying this guy, he is now working for you, that's different. Then you need a warrant.
I think that's only, I mean, like if you send your, I don't have child pornography on my computer, but let's not do child pornography, actually, because that's just reprehensible. Let's do something a little like.
Let's say you have torrents on your computer. You've been downloading movies.
And so I've got my torrents. I'm sending them in. I mean, that's something I would totally expect no one to mess with because it's a small crime.
Yeah.
But if I knew I was consigning that over to someone who was paid by the U.S. government, I would think very differently about it.
It's an interesting thing. I mean, if you're in your work, if you come across something so illegal like child pornography, I would think you'd have a duty to report it, don't you?
Yes. I would I would report child pornography in a heartbeat.
Right.
I probably wouldn't report torrents. I probably wouldn't
that's your value judgment, but I don't think there's anything wrong. In fact, I think there's a duty. If you see something,
say something.
If you see something, say something.
Couldn't there be also be a liability issue though? If you don't say something, like in the case of torrents,
exactly.
So I would think that companies might have a policy that says if you see any of these lists of things, you are obligated to report it, because if you don't, that company could be held liable in future. You know, in the future for not reporting that.
So it comes down to, is there a prior relationship between the FBI and the technician?
Yeah.
And a judge has, by the way, in the case at issue here, has agreed that the defense attorneys can bring that up and probe that relationship. So a judge, I think, is saying, yeah, well, let's find out. There is some, perhaps there is something here. The federal prosecutors argued in California that when a technician doing repairs, quote, stumbles across images of child pornography and the government wasn't aware of the search, the technician is clearly not performing the search with the intent of assisting law enforcement, and therefore that is a legal search. That's their position.
Intent and search.
Yeah.
Got it.
Any circumstance. Now, Best Buy spokesman said on Monday, Best Buy and Geek Squad have no relationship with the FBI. From time to time, our repair agents discover material that may be child porn. We have a legal and moral obligation to turn that material over to law enforcement. We're proud of our policy, and we share it with our customers before we begin any repair. I think that's germane, right? They disclose that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Any circumstances in which employee receive payment from the FBI is the result of extremely poor individual judgment. So they're saying, hey, that's on the employee. It's not something we tolerate, and it's certainly not part of our normal business behavior. Court records did not detail how often or how much the technicians were paid, other than one $500 payment to one supervisor. But emails between Geek Squad technicians and FBI agents in Louisville indicate a long-running relationship. So
see, and that, I mean, because if you're certain, I mean, you have access to my emails, you have, like, imagine they go to Google with something like that.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Okay, sorry, I thought that was really an important story.
No, that's
it is.
That's your prerogative.
Ta-da!
It's her prerogative. But that does bring us to a break and more with our picks of the week coming up in just a bit, okay? Unless you guys have something else. Last chance.
Nope.
Nope. I'm always open to, especially on this show, for some reason, I always like to give you all a chance to bring up anything that I left out. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. I love Rocket Mortgage because I am a geek and I want to do everything online. I don't know what it was like when you got your home loan, Stacey. You had to get a construction loan. That's a nightmare. Whew. Or your refi. When we bought our house, when Lisa and I bought our house a little over 3 years ago, we thought, we'd been through it before. If it'll be a couple of weeks, we have a vacation coming up in a month. Couldn't possibly go that long. There we are on our cruise, faxing documents, getting Lisa's sister to find bank statements. That thing went on for 6 or 7 weeks. That's crazy. Rocket Mortgage takes the mortgage approval process into the 21st century. You know why? Because it's backed by Quicken Loans. There's nobody better, the best mortgage lender in the country. So when it's time to buy or time to refi, I want you to check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/twig. Not only can you do the whole thing online, including submitting pay stubs and bank statements with a touch of a mouse or your finger, because you can do it on your phone or your tablet right on the couch. But because it's all computerized, it'll turn around fast. You can even, they have all these great calculators on the site where you can try different loans out. You can see what the payments are. It's totally informational, totally transparent. You know exactly what you're in for. It's all about information, isn't it, for us in the geek community? I want to do it online and I want it friction-free and I want information, and you get it all from Rocket Mortgage. And because you're doing it online, you can do it fast and get a loan in minutes that's tailored to your exact needs. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, go completely online. Quickenloans.com/twig. Quickenloans.com/twig. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. I know if I was selling a house and I had two equal buyers with offerings equal amounts of money, if one said, but I'm using Rocket Mortgage, and the other one said, yeah, I got the bank down the street, I know who I'd pick. Pretty obvious. Quickenloans.com/twig. Rocket Mortgage. Let's see. Let's get Aaron Newcomb's pick of the week to kick things off here.
All right. Got to unbury this thing. So regular viewers of This Week in Google will probably remember. I can't remember what episode it is. We'll have to get the chat room on that. But I talked about a microcontroller probably a year and a half ago or so called Onion. And we did a little demo. I think I was in the studio for that one.
Was that the LED lights? Was that the radio? What was that?
No, it's a little microcontroller called the Omega, Onion Omega. And I did a little demo of it as one of my picks. And as luck would have it, they've released a new version called the Onion Omega 2. And I happen to have it right here in my hot little hands. I got this shipped to me a couple of days ago. So that's what it looks like. You're just showing it very small. Little device, and I think that people will be interested in checking this one out.
You know why? Because it's a Linux server.
Of course.
What?
It's a Linux server.
$5.
So we talked about the $9, right? The $9 chip computer, which is this one, and this is the. Let me get them side by side here. This is the $5 Onion Omega 2. Quite similar, actually. They both have built-in Wi-Fi. The Onion Omega 2 doesn't really have a display, so to speak. But what they've done, which is really cool, is they've developed a lot of cloud-based and browser-based software so that when you hook this thing up, there it is right there, you shot flash by, you actually get All the applications you need, you get a terminal, you get ways to control the GPIO, you get all kinds of things right there in your browser, and you can just click on them and say, okay, make this GPIO, pin a I squared C interface to talk to some other thing that I want to hook up to it, for example.
Can you get video out of it?
Sure, there's a way to get video out of it. I've looked at the GPIO pins to see there's not really something built in. There is an Ethernet adapter you can get through the GPIO pins, physical Ethernet, but there's not really a way. And that's not really what they're after. I think their biggest thing that they wanted to do with this device was to make it easy for makers to jump in and use it. And video can be kind of a hassle if you don't have the right, I don't have HDMI, I only have VGA or whatever. It can be kind of a hassle. So what they did was they created this interface. And in fact, they even have their own cloud service that allows you to control these things over the cloud just by logging in, registering your device, and then you can connect to it basically from anywhere and reboot it or change things, get access to it. So they've made that part really, really easy for people to try. It has this neat little dock, by the way. The original one did too. It has this neat little dock if you want to get that, and then you just plug this right into there like that, and then you get access to a switch, USB, and then you can start stacking. They have all these really cool modules that you can start stacking up, kind of like an Arduino, if you want to do other things. So I don't know. I'd highly recommend people check it out. I think you can still buy it on their Indiegogo site. There's the stack right there. Look at it build up. All sorts of things you can do with it. So, it's yet another, it's not actually not a microcontroller. It's a real Linux box. I think it runs a version of OpenWRT, if I'm not mistaken, which is really cool. OpenWRT runs on a lot of routers and access points and things like that. But it also runs a lot of applications, and it's a super slim version of Linux. It's still very powerful, but doesn't require a lot of space. The version that I have has 32 megs of storage built in, and that's enough to hold the OS and also enough room to do firmware updates and things like that over the air. So really cool. I'd highly recommend it. I was really impressed with the first one when it came out, and the second one just adds, power and space and an SD card if you want it for even more space. And pretty cool little piece of technology. So if you're into that kind of thing and you're making really small projects or something where you just need a little Linux server to run either inside or in the background or something like that, I highly recommend checking it out. Very, very cool.
I wish I had time to do all this stuff. I would love to play with things like this. This is so cool.
It really is.
What an amazing time we live in. Wow.
$5. I don't even know how they do it.
Omega 2, it's the best fatty acid, and it's available at Indiegogo.com.
Yeah, I'm glad that's out. We talked about it like way back. Did it launch in the summer, maybe? Was it the summertime that it launched? Because we talked about it over the summer.
On this show or on IoT?
No, on the IoT podcast. Because it's like, why wouldn't you want that? A $5 Linux server.
I think now it's gotten to the point where really what you should do is start with a project, start with something you want to accomplish, and then investigate. Because there are so many choices from the Raspberry Pi on down, investigate the best way to do it. I love seeing this proliferation of different ways of handling it. But I'm the guy who buys the thing and then tries to figure out what to do. That's a mistake.
Yeah, I do that too. But that's exactly what we tell people at the makerspace. They come in and they say, "Well, what do I do with it?" I'm like, "Well,
think about that.
What do you want to do? Yeah. What do you want to do?" And then I'll tell you, and then also you're interested in actually making it happen, right? If you're just like, "I want to learn how to use a Raspberry Pi," well, okay, fine, you can do that, but why don't you find a project, and something you want to build, and then you can actually dig into exactly what you want to do with it, and it makes a big difference. They've got some examples, on their website, they have some examples of what they've done with it in terms of, teaching, turning lights on and off. I mean, that's kind of the easy one, I guess, but they also have streaming music or building robotics or, creating digital art and things like that. And once you start honing in on, oh yeah, that looks cool, I want to do that. Then the rest comes a lot easier.
Yeah. Stacy, what do you have for us?
Okay, guys, I have a buy this and don't buy that. So.
Oh, I love that. You should do that more often. This could be a whole regular thing. Buy this one. Don't buy that one.
So, okay, guys, y'all are going to laugh at me. I bought the Homedics.
Wait a minute. Don't tell me. Is that your wrestling belt that you won for being the champion?
No. Okay, I have to back up so you can get the full visual here. All right,
oh,
this.
Oh, Lord. What are you... What?
Ready?
Yeah.
It's going to make a lot of noise. It is a... See that giant glowing... It's a massager. I saw this at CES.
And you had to have it.
Okay.
This is the TrueMedic Insta...
TrueMedic Shiatsu. There it is.
Plus neck and shoulder massager.
Oh,
it's only $100. That's not bad.
So, and you can like move it around your back. And so totally buy this because it is like really great. See, it's like pushing me out. That's how strong it is. And the fact that you, because I had one of theirs where it was like, it's called the thumper. And you had to like hold it. My doctor was like, you're so tense all the time. You need this. Yeah. And so I was like, all right.
You know what I do after this is my little secret, but after every show on Wednesday, I go get a massage from a human.
So I get massages every 2 weeks from a human, but in the meantime, because my life is so stressful.
Mommy, mommy's wearing her special shawl now. Don't bother me.
It is amazing. All right, so it
does look a little bit weird, but okay.
It totally looks like an alien is like with the because the there's a heating element and that's what makes it glow orange.
Oh, that's what that weird light
is. I thought those were LEDs in there or something.
Yeah,
they might be. So it you don't really need it to get warm, but
no, why not? Let's
do
it.
My thought.
Yeah.
So I'm in love with this thing. So.
That's
buy
the
that.
TrueMedic. It's $108 on Amazon. The TrueMedic Insta Shiatsu Plus Neck and Shoulder Massager.
Yes.
Yes.
Because the weight of your arms like keeps it on there, so you don't have to.
Oh, that's why.
Now, yeah.
So
now,
slump.
I will say, at some spots, because I am a delicate female, perhaps, I don't know, it does hit my shoulder blades. So there are a couple. My husband doesn't have this problem because he has more muscle, I think, over it, his shoulder blades than I do. So if you are tinier or have not a lot of muscle, that may be a issue in certain spots. Yeah. But it still has, there's still places it works for me. So there's that. Yeah. Here's what you don't buy.
Do you fight over it? Do you like, or do you have two?
No.
Honey, it's my turn with the Insta Shiatsu.
It's always my turn with the Insta-Shiatsu. It does only run for 20 minutes before shutting down and they have to recharge it.
Oh, it's battery.
You don't have to recharge
it.
It's battery. Oh, no, that's to charge it. It's wireless, which actually is better.
Yeah, because you want to walk around. Like, yeah. Don't go outside wearing it, though. Cause...
I know.
Okay, that's the do buy. What's the don't buy?
Don't buy this.
What
this
is it?
It was so promising. It's the GE Z-Wave hinge pin open close sensor.
I saw your Instagram or your picture of this at CES.
Yes, it was my nemesis. So I tweeted about this because 2 weeks ago I saw this online and I was like, holy cow, it's like a hidden open close sensor.
I love this. I want this on my office door. When people come in my office, I want to be able to push a button and have the door close behind them.
Okay, this doesn't have a servo, so no, it wouldn't do that.
But what does it do?
That's your project. So this just tells you if the door's open and closed.
Oh.
So then it can trigger things to happen.
That's
dopey. So I know, not as exciting.
There are other things that do. I mean, smart things makes a sensor that'll do that. There's lots of companies.
The value here is that it's hidden, so it sits on a hinge pin.
Oh,
not that it's.
Well, why shouldn't we buy this, Stacey? Let's buy this. This looks good.
No, don't buy it. So it connected wonderfully to both SmartThings and to the Wink platform. So yay for the connectivity side of it. The downside is it doesn't hang tightly in the hinge pin, so it's impossible to calibrate accurately. We spent 45 minutes trying to get it to calibrate, and by golly, it just moved. And then once it moved, it was like, now my open or shut, open or shut.
Oh, you don't know.
Right.
And it how much was it? How much is it?
It's only
$40.
$40? I'm going to return to Amazon, but yes.
So if it were me, I would go down to the dollar store and get those little security things you can put on your window.
Yeah.
You know, and just hook that up to the door and then you can do all sorts of stuff.
That's
with
not
it.
Invisible. That's what
it's not invisible, but it could be.
Yes.
You could build that into a door frame.
You can build that into a door frame, but... You are like six levels of hacker more than I am. I'm like, I'm willing to futz around with software and maybe a little bit of wiring. But when we start talking about drilling into door frames with my dollar sensors, then I'm like,
yeah, no. She just
also,
built
my
this
husband
house.
Would never let me.
Yeah. Yes. Now, is your what's your husband's name?
His name is Andrew.
Is Andrew into this, or does he just look at you and just go, and let and walk away?
He's into a few things. He loved the June oven. Oh my God, that man is
Really?
Yeah. Oh yeah, he loved that thing
so much. They sent me a thing saying you've given us a deposit. We're ready to ship it, but we need the other $1,450. And I just haven't done it. I'm not. I think I'm just gonna not. But your husband loves it.
He loves it. The price is the fact that we have two ovens already, and the price like is so high. He's like,
didn't stop him.
It's hard. Yeah. He loves the Echo so much.
Good. Right.
I hear from it anytime anything's broken. But yeah, for the most part, he's just a patient man.
He just puts up with you.
He does.
That's so sweet. That's true.
You know,
love.
I cook him dinner sometimes. He's nice.
He's a nice guy. He's a lucky guy. He gets I would love to have an automated home person in my house set this stuff up because I sure ain't not doing it.
Oh, someone in your chat room just sent me the Lowe's Iris contact. So this sensor actually works with Lowe's Iris. So I'm looking at it to see and make sure it's a different sensor.
See, this goes right on the hinge. See?
Oh, I'm going to check that out because I have an Iris hub. Yeah.
It's Zigbee, baby.
Oh, Zigbee could work with other systems. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, nice person. Who was that?
And it looks like it'd be very easy to install. I don't know. But again, you might have the same calibration issue, right?
So this is my job, is to spend 45 minutes calibrating sensors and seeing if I can or not. So you don't have to.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can tell us, buy or do not buy.
So, yeah. Super fun.
Good job. Good job. My really quick, and I'll make it quick because it's not that interesting. I didn't realize as a Google Fi customer that there was a Easter egg on Google Fi, a world of thanks, and it's going to expire on January 16th. So you have only a few more days to do it. And it's, you know, it's your typical Google thing. 4 weeks, four wonderlands. You can have it snow on your head in a picture that you send people and all of that stuff. So, and it's kind of a cute, you know, you wander around and you click on things. Here, I'll create a street view snow globe. Okay. So, let's do it of the old Twitch studio. Cause I think that there's street view of that, and, I'll do next and there's the studio. I'll pick the perfect angle. Okay. Next. And now it makes a snow globe. And I can have it either have a palm tree or let it snow. Let's do let it snow. And then I can share that and send it to people. It's now snowing. It's going to be snowing. Oh, customize. No, yeah, let it snow. That's good. Okay, here we go. And I can share this with friends. If you're a Google Fi customer, fiholiday.withgoogle.com. And look, aw. Okay, admit it's stupid. I know it's dumb, but there's a whole bunch of other ones. You can wander around, ring bells, do things, play games. Oh, you can learn some languages, too. What's the most respectful greeting in Thailand? Rolling your eyes clockwise, making a loud clicking sound, kissing cheeks three times, or touching your palms and bowing?
Go on with that one.
Yeah. Touch your palms and bow. So you can learn a few things, too. This would be fun for your daughter. All right, everybody, we're out of time. We're out of recommendations. And most importantly, we're out of Stacy and Aaron. Thank you, Aaron. Thank you, Aaron Newcomb. Aaron's a great guy. Go to the Benicia Makerspace and build something if you're in the East Bay. You could find him on Google+. He's the last guy there, Aaron Newcomb. Or on Twitter, Aaron Newcomb. Don't confuse him with any
other. I'm Aaron Newcomb everywhere.
There's Aaron Newcomb everywhere.
And don't forget, I've got the new book coming out in the spring. Just put the finishing touch.
And your Wi-Fi died right at the end there.
I was like, this is a terrible idea. You don't have connectivity problems.
Remind me again, what is the book on?
It's going to be, it's Linux for Makers, and it is about Linux for Makers.
That's good.
So it'll
be great.
Published by Maker Media. Look for it in bookstores everywhere.
And we ought to interview you when it comes out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. You can pre-order it now on Amazon. Linux for makers. Thank you, Aaron.
You bet.
Stacey Higginbotham. She's running around the house making it crazy. I hope you feel better.
Oh, I will.
The Dayquil's going to start to wear off in about a minute, so we got to get Stacey off the air here.
It's true.
Stacey on IoT.
You don't want the Dayquil to
run out. No. Stacey on IoT.com or IoTpodcast.com for the great podcast she does with Kevin Toefel. Give Kevin our regards.
I always do.
I hope we'll see you next Wednesday.
I'll be here.
Every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. That's I said the wrong time. That's why the numbers didn't all add up. 1:30 p.m. Pacific. You might want to make a note of that, Stacey. 1:30 p.m. Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 21:30 UTC. That's when we get together every Wednesday. If you want to watch live, and you can now on YouTube, by the way, youtube.com/twit. We are using YouTube Live for our stream. You can watch us on Twitch. You can watch us on our website, twit.tv. You can watch us on Ustream. There are apps for many platforms, including Roku, Apple TV. They'll let you live stream, or you can download episodes. So if it's more convenient just to listen in your car, make sure you subscribe. Go to twit.tv/twig or your favorite podcatcher. That way you'll get every episode. Thanks for being here. I'm Leo Laporte. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google.